Hello friends, we are going through the journey of chapter number 6, the construction project. Now, when we started this session, we talked about the chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and now we have come to 6. Let me give a quick recap like I do with every session. This whole process of integrative management is about thinking in a and approach, not in an either or approach. We started off by understanding how integrative thinkers think by taking case studies in the chapter number 1. Isadora Sharp, we talked about A.J. Lafley and many other people. And we saw how these gentlemen took decisions during crisis, not like ordinary managers or ordinary leaders, they did it differently. And the common thing that they all did was what is called as integrative thinking and action. Then we went along and realized that this is something which can be replicated. Why we are learning this subject? Because this is a approach which all of us actually are born with, but somewhere along the line when we go higher, we tend to lose it because of certain reasons. We become an either or person by taking decisions by eliminating. Today we discuss the importance of integrative thinking in global business. World has become so complex that we need to understand that while taking decisions, we have to integrate many, many factors. So the first chapter was talking about the case studies. And then after that, we came along and created a type of a framework or an approach which can be done by anybody, you and me. Four steps. The four steps, as we know by now, is salience, causality, architecture, and finally we talk about the action steps, the four different steps, right? Now these four steps are something which everybody needs to identify. So first, when you want to become an integrative thinker, you have to ask yourself causality. Then you have to ask yourself, what is making the causality happen, my stance, and then go along to the architecture, and finally you come to the resolution. So the four stages you need to go through. So identify the four stages as the starting point of how the theory works. It's like a formula, right? So salience is first, causality second, architecture and resolution. That first we need to map and keep. This is the approach that I need to have. Now, after having done that, in the earlier chapter, chapter number 5, we discussed about we need to understand how the mind works. Now, first we have the theory, four steps. Then I want to apply the theory into practice. And for putting it into practice, I need to know how the mind works, how we take decisions. So there we got in touch with the three steps. The first step talked about the stance that you take, the perception you have about something, which leads to the tools that you employ for getting certain work done. And that leads you to experience. Stance, tools, and experience is what is happening inside me, inside you, inside all of us. So I have got a framework, four steps, I want to put it into action. Before I put it into action, I want to know how my mind operates. Am I into what is called as factory setting, or am I a person who is willing to look in multiple directions? So that chapter number 5, I've spoken about these three processes, these three steps. I take a stance, I look at the world in a certain way. Because I look at the world in a certain way, I employ certain thinking processes and thereby I get some experiences. But if I think of the world in multiple ways, I've got multiple ways of looking at the world and interacting with them. As a result, I'll be getting multiple experiences. Now that is what we got in touch with. That is about the software, about how my thinking process happens. Now in this chapter, we are taking you one step further in exposing you to six different aspects of you and me. Six different aspects which we need to cultivate. They are like affirmations. They are like sentences which you need to tell yourself believe in those sentences and start doing it all along. Six different types of approaches, six steps or six approaches, six inner talk, if I can use a word. If I want that four steps to be followed, I need to know how my thinking process takes place. And then, having understood how my thinking process takes place, I need to adopt the six steps which is being discussed in this chapter called the construction project. We are constructing ourselves into integrative thinking. That's what we're doing here. So let's go further and check out. The objective of this is to understand the six common features of integrative thinker stance. What type of a stance do I take? In the earlier chapter, I talked about three things: stance, tools, and experience. Now we are the main starting point of any thinking process is a stance I take. So now we are getting into the understanding of how the stance takes place. And we are trying to employ three tools for the self and three tools about how we think about the world. The six is split into two parts: three about myself, how I feel, and three about how I feel in the world. Right? So what we are doing out here is six common features of integrative thinker stance. Subjective construction and actual reality is another thing we'll be covering. And then contented model defense versus optimistic model seeker. Nice terms, but they're very simple and easy to understand. And then Tao. Tao stands for thinking, action, outcomes. And obstacles in the chain. What happens when I'm thinking? What obstacles come? Even if my thinking is clear, there could be obstacles in the action. Even if my actions are clear, there could be obstacles that are coming as outcomes. So how to identify them and how to address them. Okay, that's what we're covering as an objective here. And now the structure of the whole chapter will be, first is we are talking about imagining reality, right? Then we talk about the integrative thinker stance, and we talk about how to cultivate, how to make the stance happen in our lives. These are the three stages of the structure of this whole flow. It starts off with this quotation coming from the Greek period. It is impossible to begin to learn that which one thinks one already knows. It's like saying, if my cup is already full, I cannot put more water or more tea into it. If I feel I know something, I can't talk about it. I won't be able to absorb anything more. Many of us, practically all of us, we have some idea about something. We may have more idea about something. But the moment you have some idea about something, or you have more idea about something, knowledge about something, information about something, experience about something, there's a tendency for the human mind to start feeling, I know. It may be so much or it may be so much, but we have this feeling that I know. Right or wrong is not what we are questioning right now. We got to identify that I know is something with which we come with for any learning process. For example, I've created this subject for the institute, integrative manager. I'm teaching this subject. I'm also making these video shoots. Now, I could be operating from a stance, I know the subject. Trust me, I'm aware of the fact that there are times when I start thinking that I know the subject. Till I tell myself that, look, you know the subject as you know it as of today. Because this subject is so vast that I know it to the extent to which my clarity is there as of today. So when I am interacting with you, if I come from this background that I already know the subject, then it would be quite challenging for me to explain things to you which are coming from an openness. When I discuss this in the classroom or also right now in the camera, one of the things that happens to me is I generate certain examples and certain thoughts that come from nowhere. Believe me, that's what happens. I have a rough preparation about what needs to be done. I think I know it, but then I keep myself open, saying that yes, there could be something that can emerge while I'm talking on the camera. And trust me, this happens. Not everything that I'm talking to you is scripted. Not everything. A few guidelines are there, a few script is there in line with whatever is here in the PPTs, but the rest of it emerges because of certain type of a stance which I consciously try and cultivate. It's a constant process. One doesn't master it. If one keeps on mastering it, it keeps on going on and on and on and on. So the import, the understanding of this particular statement is, it is impossible to begin to learn that which one thinks one already knows. Learning is a continuous process. My colleague standing behind the camera is a very good cameraman. Now, if he comes from the paradigm saying that I am the best cameraman, then he won't be able to improvise, he won't be able to think differently. He would have taken a stance which is linear. There's a challenge. We have a smaller room, we may have a bigger room, we may have a room in which the lighting is not okay. Now, if my colleague behind the camera is having a stance saying that I know what to do, this works, this doesn't work, if he takes an either or approach, would he be able to create, would he be able to innovative? To be innovative, he won't be. But fortunately, he's not. And then he innovates. Given any space, given any lighting conditions, given any type of odd furniture arrangement, this guy does a good job because he has this integrative thinking in him. In fact, many people have it. Many people have it. Those of us who are open to resources without taking a fixed either or approach and we keep ourselves open, we'll find that we can create anything anywhere. I draw a lot from this sentence to keep on telling myself, however good a trainer people tell me I am, however good a faculty people tell me I am, I need to constantly remind myself, I am as good as I am today, tomorrow may be a different ball game. Now this is something consciously one needs to cultivate. This is something with experience coming in, one gets the feeling that I know. Yes, you know, but you know so much, there's so much to be learned. So please ponder over this statement, okay? It's coming from, even before, it's a BC, it's a statement that's coming from Epictetus, and it's a very profound statement coming from the Greek mythology. Now we start off by talking about what is called as imagining reality. The next few slides, I'll just talk about it to you and I'll just show the slide and you have to pause and read it. I won't be going word by word, I'll explain to you what exactly these next four or five slides are talking about. Now there is this lady called Victoria Hale, pharmaceutical scientist from the University of California, US, and she worked as a senior reviewer of new drug applications at Food and Drug Administration, USA, at Genentech, the world's leading biotech company. This was her background. She was one of those integrative thinkers, and she realized that she needed to do more than what she is doing. The pharmaceutical industry typically is doing a lot of service for mankind. The pharmaceutical industry is one wherein developments take place, and the developments are important so that they come out with newer drugs, better ways of healing people, quicker healing in terms of time, and effective in terms of regaining health. This is a positive endeavor of every pharmaceutical company in the world. Now what happens? The pharmaceutical companies need to create newer and newer, what they call it as newer molecules in research and development. Newer drugs. Now development of a drug costs huge amount of money. Now for getting that huge amount of money, they need to generate huge amount of profits. For generating the profits, they have to sell the existing drugs, medicines at a certain profitable margin. Now on one hand, I'm trying to help people, I'm trying to do a service to mankind by curing illness by giving them medicines. On the other hand, I need money to make my R&D. I appear to be a villain for the people who want the medicines but they don't get it at an affordable price. So pharmaceutical industry by design or default, I do not really know, have got a bad name, inverted commas. They are seen as profit centers although they are supposed to be healing the people. There are two sides to the story. I wouldn't take a side and say that they are wrong or they are right. The fact is, look at the larger picture. They have to make their profits so that they give better and better medicines. Now this is on one side of the story. Every pharmaceutical company needs to be a profit center, a profit making company. On the other hand, there is a need for medicines, drugs to be made available to the poorest of poor man, to every person who is not well, who is ill, to make him recover and lead a healthy life. That's what we owe to mankind. Now, if I want to do the second part is what? I want to ensure that every medicine, be it a small thing like a energy tablet or a cancer drug on the other end of the spectrum, very expensive, it should be affordable to everybody. Now, if it has to be affordable to everybody, it means I should sell it at a cheapest price. If I sell a medicine at a cheapest price, what happens? The company which is making the medicines and selling it would not be generating huge profits, or profits for that matter. If they don't generate profits, what happens? They won't be able to have money for making other drugs and creating newer drugs. So the same population may be going through number of diseases, number of ailments. While I'm addressing one ailment by giving subsidized drugs to them, I won't be able to do subsidy for other people, other drugs, other ailments. Now, the country, the state, they try to give subsidies for such type of drugs for this population, and the state will absorb all the losses. They'll say a drug which is costing say 10 rupees to the pharmaceutical company, the state may say, okay, sell it for 3 rupees or 4 rupees, we will absorb the remaining 5 or 7 rupees. Now, that absorption, it's either paid by the government and they have to get it from somewhere, and in the bargain what happens is, I'm saving people but I'm also losing on profits. Can I make drugs out of nowhere, out of nothing and give it to all the masses? It's not possible. So there's a socialistic thinking towards people, there's also a profit motive, corporate thinking on the other side. Now Victoria Hale was caught up in this. She was a lady who said, I want to see that either or doesn't happen. I want to integrate both. And to integrate both, she was thinking hard how to make it happen, and then they hit upon a certain type of a disease which was there in the third world countries including India. And for the disease, there appeared to be no cure, a disease called Kala Azar, right? And for the disease, she went along, and her company, a company which she floated for this purpose, that company actually developed a drug and they started selling it at a very, very affordable price. Thereby, they made a good amount of profits. Now, I'll just read through the next few slides for you to know the story fully. So here she says she quits a promising career to create in the year 2000 the Institute for One World Health, the world's first non-profit pharmaceutical company, as she was disgusted with the pharmaceutical industry's failure to address the needs of the poor and the complacency of the medical profession. Right? It is called as the IOWH mission. IOWH mission. To change the way in which drugs are developed, or more to the point, not developed. We spend millions of dollars in developing a new drug. Now, the way we are spending money on that, could we also relook into that, is a question. We are not experts in the field of pharmacy, but certainly different ways of ensuring that we are able to optimize the spending, the investment in creating a new drug, so that we are able to change the way in which the drugs are developed, in which the R&D takes place. And to change the ways in which drugs are developed, or more to the point of not developed, for diseases afflicting the world's poor nations, the poor people, right? The industry had two ways of developing drugs for the people who need them. This is what I've explained briefly, right? First was the traditional for-profit pharmaceutical model, in which a drug company spends billions of dollars to develop a drug for a particular disease, obtains regulatory approval after years of research, and sells at a price that covers the costs and provides returns to the stockholders. The second approach, known as a public health model, involves using subsidies from the government and pharmaceutical companies themselves to make expensive drugs affordable to the poor patients. The first for-profit model mobilizes hundreds of billions of dollars in capital to find new drugs for endemic diseases, diseases which are common, which happen again and again. The second public health model leverages takes advantage of the government and pharmaceutical companies' resources to help millions of people buy drugs they can't otherwise afford. This is social cause and this is profit cause, right? Now, but none address the massive needs of the people in the poorest countries. For-profit pharmaceutical companies develop new drugs for people who can afford them. They have no incentive to address diseases that primarily affect poor people because the drugs to treat these people won't generate enough revenue for their developers to recoup their research and distribution cost. Common sense, right? There is no future in targeting customers who can't pay. Profit way of looking at it, right? Now, the public health model brings the cost of existing drugs down within the reach of millions of poor people. But it can only expand markets for existing drugs. It can't bring new drugs into the market. A certain disease is identified, which is afflicting the poor nations or the poor people, and we give the drugs at the most affordable cost, most affordable price. Now, I can keep on selling it. It's absolutely wafer thin margin or no margin or even less than that. We may be going in losses for a social cost purpose, but then we won't be able to develop something new because there will be no profits, right? The second model can bring drugs within the reach of the poor, but can't provide new drugs for diseases that are killing them. Hale, Victoria Hale did not want to accept this gap in which major diseases flourish. Why can't we have a not-for-profit pharmaceutical company? She argued. If we could put together the technology, the people and the resources to get through the development stage and we have a product that would be affordable, let's try it. Let's put it together. Combining technology, people and resources together. Right? And thus IOW was formed. IOWH was formed. The next step was to zero in, to identify the target of a disease that would be susceptible to pharmaceutical intervention, where there's a pharmaceutical requirement, there's a requirement for a drug to be administered, intervened. She selected a parasitic disease concentrated in poorest Bangladesh, India, Nepal, Brazil, and Sudan in Africa, called as leishmaniasis. Skin sores that are erupting as a result of a fly bite that can carry parasites, destroying the internal organs of the body that killed 500,000 people every year. There was an antibiotic, amphotericin, to kill Kala Azar. That's the name of the disease, the black fever, as this disease was called in these countries. So this name, leishmaniasis, is nothing other than Kala Azar. If you go to the interiors of India, they know this disease, they'll tell you what it is, right? But it costs more than the lifetime earnings. Now, Hale and her IOWH team launched a search for an affordable treatment for black fever. Before long, they found paromomycin that offered cure to 95% patients suffering from Kala Azar. This drug was produced as a new drug with an optimum R&D investment. Not more, not too less, but exactly the one that was required. So even the process of research and development could be optimized in such a way that the cost to the company is not very high. So when my cost is not very high, I can afford to sell it at an affordable price to the people who want it. So we are relooking the whole thing from a different paradigm, different angle altogether, right? In August 2006, FDA India approved paromomycin for treating black fever in India, and for a full course of treatment, the cost was a mere $10 per patient within the reach of the government of India to cover all its citizens. This actually happened in our country. IOWH lobbied in the other countries with large numbers of black fever to follow suit. Most of the tropical countries, people get affected by this, especially in the poorer sections. And so here was a drug available and IOWH was able to integrate their thinking process. This is what is coming under imagining reality, which Victoria Hale did in her IOWH. And for that, all the various awards she got is given in the slide. Breakthrough, she was named as the social entrepreneur, outstanding social entrepreneur by the Schwab Foundation 2004. selected as the executive of the year by the Esquire magazine 2005, and there it follows. There are about five of them that are listed here, right? So she also won the MacArthur's Fellowship in 2006, MacArthur's Foundations, and the words exceptional creativity and promise for important future advances based on a track record of significant accomplishment. That's what they spoke about her, quote unquote. If there was an award for an excellence in integrative thinking, she should win that too. Right? Now, we just discussed that, right? Now, we will be discussing about the stance which a person has to take. What sort of a stance do I take? I need to look into my stance. So what we are doing right now is from this slide onwards, slide number 16, we'll be talking about integrative thinkers and their six features. The six features of their stance. The perception I have about something is my stance. So what sort of features these people have, we are getting in touch with that now onwards. So integrative thinkers are a varied lot, but their stances are common in six features. Three concern the world around them. If I'm an integrative thinker and I have these six features, out of these six features, there are three features. It's about how I look at my role in the world. How I look at my role in the world. Three are about my view about the world. Let me repeat. Three are how am I playing a role in this world. Three are about the world itself outside me. So three are about me and three are about the world, in short. We are simplifying it to make every student of integrative management to understand how to put it into practice. There are six statements that are coming now. Six different types of understandings. If these understandings are cultivated by each one of us, we'll find that integrative thinking happens very fast. We'll realize where we are going wrong and getting stuck and getting limited results. Right? Three concern the world around them and three concern their role in it. This is about outside, this is about me inside. First, the very first one is, this is about the world. They believe that existing models do not represent reality. What does it mean? It simply means that there is something working. Some system is working. For example, if I take the case of Mumbai, the city of Mumbai, where we are located, we had the railways which are doing a very good job of transporting people from long distances. Not the most comfortable journey, but definitely they are very good in terms of timely transportation of people, very huge amount of people they're transporting in this city like Mumbai, which is hugely populated. Long distances they make it. Both the railways, we have the Central Railway and the Western Railway, right? Now, if the city planners had said that this is it, we can't do anything beyond that, would we had the monorail coming in? Would we had the metro rail coming in? No. So existing models do not represent reality. Reality is what people were still struggling to transport themselves from place to place. They were struggling to transport themselves from place to place. Certain places where there is no railhead, for example, there were a lot of traffic jams, unplanned roads, bylanes and lanes. Now what is to be done about it? Some group of people have sat down and they are the people who did some integrative thinking. And they said, let's do something about it. And today the city is connected. Some 12 stations are there on the metro track. All the 12 stations, if one goes through the map, will notice that these are located in such a way that there was no scope for people to really reach them had they gone by road in a quick, shortest possible time. Somebody or a group of people realize existing models do not represent reality. At that point of time, both the railways, rather there are three of them, Harbour, Central and Western in Mumbai, they are able to do their best under those circumstances. A group of people looked at the issues of the city and they said, look, let's do something about it. And then they started doing all sorts of brainstorming. They went, they must have seen the models abroad, and then they came out and said that let's have something which is affordable to the common man. And it's affordable, at the same time we use technology for making things happen. It's very recent that the metro has just got launched in Mumbai, and very affordable fare as of now, 20 rupees for one journey, point to point, or maybe 15 rupees or whatever, which is affordable to the commonest of common citizen of this city. Now, existing models do not represent reality is what somebody thought of, so this has happened. So integrative thinkers are not content and happy with what is existing right now. They say something more than that. It's like saying, yeah, dil mange more. And they look at something better and better and better and better. Look at the international terminals, the airports, which we have made in the recent about 5 or 10 years. Existing cities like Mumbai, Chennai, Bangalore, Kolkata, all the metro cities and even the other cities, we had certain airports. The load started increasing. And then when you're modifying the airport for accepting the load, you have to also think of so many other realities. And when they do that, they realize that it's not enough to have larger terminals, able to take more airlines coming, more landings and takeoff. We need to also learn how to do the baggage handling efficiently. People don't get, you know, clustered in one corner. So many things come into picture. So all this thing is possible looking at the contemporary, whatever is the need of the hour. So as we keep on changing in the world, as the world keeps changing, I've got to keep on understanding that existing models, models that are working today in the 21st century, in this particular year, may not work 10 years from now. If I'm rigid in saying that this is the way it is, well, I'll get outdated, I won't be integrative thinking. I'll not accept it, right? So, as Hale said before, IOWH, it should be IOWH, this is reality, it's the way things are. No, 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 there's much messier situation behind that and around that and enmeshed in that. Like, she could have resigned and said, well, that's the way it is. Pharma companies are there to make money. One cannot do anything about it. And then the people in the poor nations, I mean, they are the way they are. They languish. So, could have shrugged their shoulders and said, well, that's it. But she didn't do that. She said, no, that is the model which is there as of now, but there's a better model waiting for us. So, she was the one who thought and initiated that particular model. Right?